This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I think it's an important general assembly in the sense that it occurs at a critical time internationally and also for the African continent, given the issues of climate change and the effects of climate change that we're seeing in different parts of Africa.
That was Paul Nanatulia, research associate at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, on what the UN General Assembly should focus on regarding Africa. Details coming up. Also, Kenya's President William Ruto says he and Ukrainian President Zelensky have agreed to set up a grain hub in Mombasa. And the public in Gabon appears to support the military junta's arrest and detention of ousted President Ali Bongo's son. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. More than 140 leaders and state representatives from around the world have descended on New York to address the annual United Nations General Assembly under the theme Rebuilding Trust and Reigniting Global Solidarity. Paul Nanatulia, research associate at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, tells me that given the many challenges Africa is facing, this year's assembly is critical.
I think it's an important general assembly in the sense that it occurs at a critical time internationally and also for the African continent, given the issues of climate change and the effects of climate change that we're seeing in different parts of Africa. The complaint by African countries that 17 of the hotspots in the world are in Africa, and yet Africa contributes far less than any other region to contributing to environmental damage. So that is the one issue. You then have wars. You have coups that have taken place and which are now seem to be occurring at a much more frequent rate, which is extremely alarming for the African peace and security architecture. You also have economies that have sustained significant damage as a result of COVID-19, and these economies are still struggling. You have the war in Ukraine, which is affecting African countries in a very direct way in terms of food security, in terms of energy prices. I was in Tanzania for about a month, and I could see a huge jump in prices at the petrol pump, and everybody is complaining about that. So it's a critical UN General Assembly, and African countries are so far, just by listening to the speeches that have been given by President Ramaphosa and other presidents, there are quite a number of issues, I think, that African countries are trying to put on the table.
President Bola Tinubu just called for more direct investment in Africa.
Yes, more investment in Africa, more investment by the more powerful countries in the north to make good of their pledges to support African countries to mitigate the effects of climate change. Those pledges have not been realized. There's also a push by African countries, again, for the reform of the United Nations, in particular the Security Council, to be more representative of the world as it is, given that the greater burden of conflicts in the world today are in Africa and other parts of the global south. So the call for comprehensive reform of the United Nations and the Security Council in particular. Some countries have also tried to market the continent as a safe and exciting and dynamic destination for investment, despite all the problems the continent is going through. And so some delegations have really talked, including the South African delegation, which is an all-women delegation, by the way, have talked about the African Continental Free Trade Area and the need for greater investment. So I guess it's a mixed bag. There's a lot of apprehension, but at the same time, there's a lot that African countries are expecting to get out of this particular General Assembly.
And Paul, lastly, you said you were in East Africa very recently. Mm-hmm. What about Sudan? It's turning to be a failed state.
Yes, correct. Sudans are dangerously moving towards becoming failed states, and so this is one of the pressure points. I think that that African stakeholders are going to be putting a lot of pressure on the different delegations that are going at the United Nations General Assembly to prioritize these issues, because conflicts seem to be metastasizing. Sudan, of course, has been through a number of coups, and now it seems to be, you know, teetering on the verge of a full blown civil war, and that instability extends all the way into the Sahel and all the way up to West Africa. I mean, you know, so yes, these are demands that are being made, and I think the real challenge now for the delegations of the United Nations General Assembly will be, how do African countries respond to popular demands and aspirations coming from citizens? I think that is the big issue. Of course, there are other delegations. I mean, we tend to focus a lot on government delegations, but there are other delegations that are at the UN General Assembly as well. You know, NGOs, civil society, there are going to be many meetings on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly. So it will be interesting to see how African countries take note of these meetings and try and meet their citizens halfway. I think the message that is coming from Africa is that it cannot be business as usual.
That was Paul Nanatulia, Research Associate at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, speaking with me right here in Washington, D.C. Kenya's President William Ruto says he and Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky have agreed to set up a grain hub in Mombasa to help address East Africa's food shortages. In a statement, Ruto said he met Tuesday with Zelensky on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly in New York. The Russian invasion of Ukraine in February 2022 led to a shortage of grains in global markets, which had strained food supplies and escalated prices in regions reliant on Ukrainian grain. Macharia Munani is a professor of history and international relations at United States International University in Nairobi, Kenya. He tells the VOA's Douglas Mpuga that it's a failure of policy for African countries to depend on another continent for grain.
It shows that Ukraine has been working very hard to be acceptable somewhere, because that's one of the things, reaching out to various African countries and other places to be seen to be acceptable, so that its narrative makes sense. So far, it has not been making sense. But it also shows the flexibility. President William Ruto, who has a desire to be acceptable as a world leader, and with the encouragement of the United States, so they have reached some common ground where both sides, Ruto and Zelensky, appear to benefit from the deal. The actual implementation of it is another matter. Symbolism of it is the key thing.
What do you make of African countries running to Europe for grain?
It is a disaster in itself, because it forces a reflection on the leadership, the policymakers in the country. Africa has pretty good land for growing food. To be told that because people are fighting in Europe, then Africans are starving, is kind of an insult. Because it goes back to the fundamentals of the policy making, who is in charge of policy making. And so we need to reflect seriously to take care of our own interests. We do not seem to do very well as Africans. And so people have their problems over there. You suffer because they have their own problems. It should be the other way around. Africa should be sending grains and their food to the Europeans. The mess in Ukraine has really exposed the weakness on the side of the African, particularly the policy leaders, makers who are supposed to be looking after African interests.
Do you find it weird that grain has become an issue, lack of grain in Africa?
It is weird. I mean, it is true. Africa is capable of feeding not only itself, but the rest of the world. But that's why we are saying the policy makers are to blame, because they have failed to look after African interests. It is an insult for people to say that you are food should be coming from Ukraine or Russia, either way, because they are the same zone, for people in Africa to be fed. And the good part of it is that it is forcing rethinking. Why is this the case? Where have the African policymakers gone wrong? Because that's what it means. The leaders may be very comfortable. In fact, they are usually very comfortable. what they are imposing things. But overall, they damage themselves when this becomes the reality. Why should Kenya be depending on Ukraine or Russia for its food? It makes no sense at all. But that's the reality. So we have to face it and figure out what to do so that we are not caught in the same mess again.
The leaders may have their own agenda. To a common African on the continent, how does it feel?
It is embarrassing that you are told the reason there is no food is because people are fighting in Europe. And then you are burdened with extra taxes and the cost of living is skyrocketing and things are dislocated. And with that dislocation, you then have contradictions that are very apparent. Well, we have a phenomenon where the middle class is shrinking and the top class is also increasing a little bit and becoming extremely rich, but the bottom low is becoming bigger. And that's where the contradiction is, because you see the leaders living large and then saying that you should understand people are fighting in Europe. That's why you cannot look after your interests. It is a reflection of bad thinking, bad policies, and maybe the benefit time for people to get their act together.
That's Macharia Monani, a professor of history and international relations at United Nations International University in Nairobi, Kenya. He spoke with VOA's Douglas Mpuga from Nairobi. African heads of state and youth leaders focused on the continent's needs yesterday at the United Nations General Assembly, with many calling for support of the UN's 2030 Agenda and Sustainable Development Goals. One African president called for a stepped-up withdrawal of UN peacekeeping forces from his country, while others urged the leaders to quickly answer calls for help after disasters. VOA's Carol Van Dam has more.
The speech of Libya's Minister of Youth, Fatala Af Al-Zouni, came a week and a half after floods devastated the coastal city of Derna. He appealed for the world to live up to its responsibility to Libya to help with the aftermath of the disaster. Al-Zouni also says it is necessary to hold free elections in Libya, a country mired in civil war and political instability for years. The Democratic Republic of Congo's president wants the world's second largest UN peacekeeping force to move up its departure from the country beginning this December. He said it has failed to rein in conflicts in the eastern part of the country. In his address, President Felix Tshisekedi said the 17,000-strong peacekeeping mission had been unable to confront the conflicts in eastern Congo, which he said are tearing apart the Central African nation. Tshisekedi also called for expanding the UN Security Council seats to include the African Union.
Les peuples africains ne comprennent pas souvent l'attitude équivoque, la politique de deux poids deux mesures.
He says African peoples do not often understand what he called the double standards at work, the ambiguities and the procrastination at the UN, especially in its Security Council, to political and security crises in Africa. Tshisekedi said this is notably the case in the forgotten crisis of Western Sahara, which has driven apart two kindred countries, Algeria and the Kingdom of Morocco. Nano Addo Dankwa Afudo Kado, the president of Ghana, said the theme of this year's session, rebuilding trust and reigniting global solidarity, is an acknowledgement that things are not what they ought to be in our world. Irregular migration has been a major topic at the General Assembly. Italy's prime minister urged the UN to launch a global war without mercy against migrant smugglers after a surge of arrivals on the island of Lampedusa. In her speech, Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni said Italy is ready to lead efforts against what she calls the slave traders of the third millennium. Many of the migrants trying to reach Europe come from Africa, often risking their lives to make the journey due to deadly conflicts at home, lack of jobs, or climate change. Carol Van Dam for VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. The public in Gabon appears to support the military junta's arrest and detention of the son of ousted President Ali Bongo and members of his cabinet. Military officials in the capital, Libreville, charged them this week with crimes including treason and corruption. From neighboring Cameroon, Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports marches have been held in several towns in a show of solidarity with the junta's action.
Yann-Ghislain Ngoulou, Noureddine Bongo Valentin, Steve Nzego.
André Patrick Reponnot, the state prosecutor for Libreville, reads names and tells Gabon's national television that two of the 12 persons arrested on August 30, shortly after Gabon's military seized power from Ali Bongo, will regain their freedom. He says three people, including Sylvia Bongo Ondimba, ousted President Ali Bongo's wife, are being held under house arrest. He was speaking Wednesday evening. Gabon's government accuses Sylvia of attempting to protect people involved in crime, but has given no details. Reponnot said Ali Bongo's eldest son, Noureddine Bongo Valentin, former presidential spokesman Jesse Eli Ekoga, and five other close aides of the deposed leader are being held in provisional detention.
Qui les a inculpés, selon les cas.
Reponnot says the suspects will answer charges, including the orchestration of violence and fraud during elections, falsification of the signature of the president of Gabon, corruption, embezzlement, money laundering, illegal procurement and possession of wealth, treason, and several other crimes. State TV showed video of government troops searching the homes of the former cabinet members and seizing trunks, suitcases, and bags filled with bank notes. The junta has not disclosed how much money they believe was held by the former officials, but the Ministry of Justice says much of the money was recovered from the deposed president's eldest son. Gabon's political opposition has always accused Noureddine of planning to take power from his father. Ali Bongo came to power in 2009 following the death of his father, Omar, who had led the Central African country since 1967. Gabon's opposition, activists, and civil society groups have marched in several towns, including Libreville, in support of the arrest. Zakari Mibutu is the leader of Gabon's opposition National Union Party and a former presidential aspirant. He spoke to Gabon State TV Thursday. He says by prosecuting people who pilfer state resources and drag the image of Gabon in the mud, military leader Nguema has begun what he, Mibutu, intended to do if he had been elected in 2009 when he ran for president of Gabon. He says all Gabon citizens should assist the junta to free the country and bring back stolen money. Gabon's opposition and civil society groups that support the military junta say members of the ousted president's family are suspected to have acquired real estate empires and stashed huge amounts of money in foreign banks, which could remove the oil-producing nation and its citizens from poverty and reduce the gap between the majority poor and the few rich. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
While some members of West Africa Regional Political and Economic Group, ECOWAS, have mentioned possible military operations to restore democracy in Niger, the military leaders of Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger have signed a mutual defense pact. The charter for the new Sahel grouping says any act on the sovereignty and territorial integrity of one or more contracted parties will be considered an aggression against the other parties. Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, discussed the development with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shenawi.
Well, I think it's very revealing. It is effectively showing that we have now an alliance of military juntas, and it is revealing that they feel a sense of entitlement for the military to rule and thereby entrenched themselves in power. And so effectively, this alliance is an explicit challenge to the norm of civilian democratic governance in ECOWAS. And it harkens back to the dark decades of military governments that we saw in the region, which have caused great suffering in each of the countries that we're talking about and has left negative legacy of underdevelopment and instability and corruption that these countries continue to suffer from. I think the creation of this alliance also clearly shows the real objectives of these juntas. While they justified their coups on security grounds and they promised that they'll be transitioning back to democracy, there's no signs of that. This is really about them seizing power and propping one another up and holding on to that power at all cost.
Would that pact discourage ECOWAS intervention plan?
I don't think it really affects the ECOWAS plan. You know, while this alliance is formed and it's meant to be a deterrent to ECOWAS, these juntas are not very strong militarily. They can't even provide security in their own countries. So they have very limited ability to project power and help out their neighbors. This is mostly symbolic. And as I indicated, it's revealing for the audacity of these juntas who really are demonstrating that they are proud of creating this new military government model that they want to see instituted and entrenched in the region.
The countries involved in the new pact have small armed forces. Niger, for example, can only field 20,000 soldiers with only the equivalent of several units capable of real sustained fighting. These countries also have shortages of warplanes and other equipment. Would that create an opportunity for some foreign supporters, such as Iran, Russia, and China, which have interests in the region, to back them militarily?
Well, this is exactly what Russia has tried to do in the region, primarily in Mali, but also to some extent in Burkina Faso and now Niger. But it isn't necessarily military support that they're providing. Russia really isn't providing many resources militarily or economically. What Russia is providing is political support to these juntas. It has been the international actor that has been most active in justifying and defending the unconstitutional seizures of power in the region. You know, the deployment of the Wagner forces in Mali, you know, about 1,000 troops or so. These troops are not providing security for Malian citizens. They are providing regime security. Meanwhile, the security situation in Mali has rapidly deteriorated while Wagner was on the ground. And we've seen human rights abuses linked to Wagner and the Malian forces skyrocket while they've been on the ground. So these are not security operations in the traditional sense of what we're thinking about to help stabilize the country. I think, you know, that what we're really seeing is that these juntas, you know, because they lack legitimacy, they crave this international attention and support from external actors. And so this makes them vulnerable. It makes them vulnerable to co-option from these external actors who are effectively engaging in state capture. And so what we're seeing is these juntas, by and large, trading their country's sovereignty for the junta's ability to hang on to power.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA Senior Analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Adrius Regas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.